thank you for your patience and welcome to this evening's Monroe City Council meeting on March 19, 2013. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask if Edie would take roll call, please.
Councilperson Gary.
Here.
Cutterback. Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Gamble.
Here.
Hanford.
Here.
Student Representative Pirano.
Here.
All right, thank you very much. We have some visitors today from Boy Scouts of America. It's Troop 191. And as always, we are honored to have scouts attend our council meetings. I've asked if one of those gentlemen would be willing to lead in our Pledge of Allegiance, and Hunter has said that he would. So, Hunter, if you would, I'd like to ask you to come to the podium here and let's join Hunter in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that, Andrew. Thank you very much, and welcome to you all, gentlemen, from Troop 191. All right, a couple of things here this evening, first of which is a proclamation that I'd like to read. And this proclamation, I think it's close to me as well as many in the city of Monroe. Many have worked with children out at Miracle League and so forth. I myself have a family member who is developmentally disabled. And the proclamation here tonight is recognizing and including those with developmental disabilities. And so let me read this here this evening. Whereas in 1987, President Ronald Reagan declared the month of March as National Developmental Disabilities Awareness Month and asked Americans to join him in, according to our fellow citizens with such disabilities, both encouragement and the opportunities they need to lead productive lives and to achieve their full potential. And whereas the group known as Inclusion Works advocates building community, inclusion for people with developmental disabilities, and whereas discovering what makes us the same rather than what makes us different helps us connect more with our developmentally disabled citizens. Whereas understanding that people with developmental disabilities can be productive and contributing members of their community. And whereas promoting public awareness of the needs and the potential of citizens with developmental disabilities is a vital part of creating the feeling of belonging to the community for all citizens. Now therefore, I, Robert G. Zimmerman, Mayor of the City of Monroe, do hereby proclaim March 20th, 2013 as Choose to Include Day in Monroe, and I challenge all citizens to reach out to connect with people they don't know or may have previously viewed as different and encourage their inclusion in and contribution to the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
We do have an update on the agenda for you with regards to the Monroe Music Fest presented by Keith Brock, but Mr. Brock is in traffic on his way this evening, so he's running a couple of minutes late. So what we'll do instead is move on to comments from citizens and allow for some time to give to citizens to speak to City Council. Citizens may speak to council on any issue except any qualified judicial matters subject to a public hearing. Please ask that you limit your time to 5 minutes. And for the record, we appreciate your name and address. All right, I have couple signed up here, and I'm sorry, sir, but I can only read Lester. I'm not sure about the last name.
Zeese.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Zeese.
Well, I live out at the old Diamondium Ranch, and we've got people walking from Lake Tyson coming through my property through up to the old Diamondium Ranch. They're coming there from the brick factory. We had the same problem last year. Sunday, I kicked six people off. Yesterday, at 10:25, I kicked 10 people off. Some of them are the same ones I did Sunday, and I called the park supervisor. He didn't call me back. He just told me because he got a hold of the police or something. So I don't know what we're going to do with it. We had the same problem about 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, they're coming current up to my trailer. I mean, they're walking, and Pat and Renner have got no trespassing sign. We got one sign that's on a big white sign, and blue says, keep out. And people don't even read that. Plus, the contractors are coming in from the grade school dumping water. So I've got to go along there every Monday morning and pick up all the garbage that the people throw and walk, and the dogs. I mean, I have found dog collars, dog leashes, and everything on that road that the people have left or their dogs have lost. I mean, I thank the park people. I mean, I know it's going on park property, but I mean, along that lake there, they should look over. They see some stuff on the road. I think they should pick it up. I mean, that road, some of these people around here in a row, I think they don't care about reading signs. They just don't care about who property they walk on or know nothing. That just like if they came over here in your thing right there at City Hall, just come right across the lawn there. They probably wouldn't even care, but you guys would. That's the way some of these people are around here. And a lot of them are young people or middle age. None of them are senior citizens. There are actually from 25 to 45 people. I mean, I don't know what we're going to do about it. I mean, it's trespassing. If I have to, I'll call the sheriff and have him arrested. And then they'll have to go to court. Then you people be in trouble. Because they're coming on from city property onto county property. Now, I don't know what your city council's going to do, or the park. I brought this up about 2 years ago. Now I'm a resident here, this right here in Moreau. I'm not living down there in Covington. I'm living right here. I voted last year here. So I have got rights now. I mean, if I have to, I'll just keep coming in here every week and complaining. Can you people do something about it? Maybe all your county commissioners should come out there and see the signs. How we've got the signs. Pat, them guys have got blue signs. They've got big signs on the river track that Dave or Remarier and Incarnation has put up. He spent a lot of money, but still the people don't come through there. We had, a couple weeks ago, we had a burglary out there. I had probably about 10 or 12 cops out there with dogs at 6 o'clock in the morning. I didn't know what was going on because I seen flashlights going on. So I got up and they said they had a burglary to stay in the trailer. So that's what I did. But I mean, they did come to my trailer and knock on the door. Because I mean, we've got tractors and everything out there. I mean, I don't know what you people are going to do, but I'm getting tired of it. Maybe city council people should just come out there and see the area where they're coming in. They're coming in from the brick factory. The park people can't use that anymore because brick factory's closed down. They've got the gate. Maybe they should put a chain or rope on their own little stakes and block it off so the people can't walk through there. Because what they do when they make the curve, they just keep on coming around because you guys got the asphalt coming on past the thing there. The park people in the brick factory open used to come in there and park the equipment in there and get in there and do their work in there. But now they can. Because we can't even, the brake factory's got them cement things through there. I mean, we can't even drive through there. We've got to come completely around. And also the construction guys here coming in from the school, they're dumping halfway up there. I don't know if they got permission, but they're dumping water, whatever it is, because they got four or five water trucks coming in there. So, I mean, so they do it 24 hours a day. So, Dave Ringmeyer can't lock that gate down there by the school because they're in there 24 hours a day. See, he put that gate up there so people couldn't come in because after the brick factory closed down, there was no other way for them to come in except for the main up there from Highway 2. But now they got two ways to come in. But then we haven't had any people, just that these people walk. And Park Nice and I can tell you about 2 years ago, I don't know, maybe some of you people were here about 2 years ago when I complained about it. But I mean, I'm getting tired of it. Going down there every morning picking up all that garbage. Maybe next Tuesday I should just bring all the garbage up here and put it on the table and show you park people how much garbage is on that road from the people running, walking on that trail. Just show you how much garbage it is. I'll probably get a half of a bag. So I don't know what you people are going to do about it.
Thank you, Mr. Zeeswood. We'll have a discussion with staff to see what recommendations we can make. Just so council understands, the Lake Tahoe Park Trail kind of goes on the west side of the lake. Just to the west of that is a roadway, private property. That's the property that we're talking about here this afternoon or this evening. A couple years ago, we did add some additional signage to help dissuade folks from walking on the private property. But we'll have staff take a look and talk with the police department as well as to what we can possibly do to help out with this. Sorry for your inconvenience there, sir. Thank you. We're going to continue on with the public comments here. We just had a few, and then we'll invite our guest, Keith Rock, to provide an update here. But moving on here, we have Mr. Abbott.
Hello. First, a little disclaimer. I've been up since 2 o'clock this morning. I've already worked 2 8-hour jobs. The only time I sat down today was back there. I'm normally sleeping by now, so cut me some slack if I get a little squirrely. I live in Salton, but I own a business in downtown Monroe. My name is Andrew Abt. I, along with Mary Torgerson and Karen Clifton, own and operated the Skyward Bakery on Main Street for 26 years. By the way, I'm talking about parking. I dare say that no one has spent more hours watching the traffic and parking on Main Street than I have. I think I offer a unique perspective. I have spent literally tens of thousands of hours over 26 years viewing what's happening in downtown as far as parking, traffic. I've talked to tens of thousands of people about their time in Monroe, how they spend their time in Monroe, what they think of the parking. I've talked to residents that live in downtown, in the area. I think I have a little of a unique perspective. During all these years, parking has always been a hot topic. I have attended many meetings over the years addressing this issue. As a matter of fact, I addressed the council, stood here 4 years ago in the last parking debate, after which the council decided to take no action and make no changes to the then existent regulations, which are the same as they are now. I just learned tonight that Reagan was in office when we opened the business. The way we found out that the parking had again came up for review flabbergasted us. The Monroe Monitor arrived at the bakery with a map of downtown showing recommended restrictions as if a decision had already been made. I found it amazing that time and effort had already been put into this, and we have never been notified, contacted, talked to. And I wonder just how many other downtown business owners and building owners are in the same boat that we are. I am surprised that it's gone this far without us knowing that it was in the works. I understood that there was a meeting in February And then a week or 10 days later, the map shows up. It appears to me, even though it's probably not the case, that decisions have already been made about what it should look like. And I'm not comfortable with that. I would think that it would be imperative that all businesses and building owners have a chance to give input on the parking situation, as this issue can greatly affect their investment and livelihood. In our opinion, two-hour enforced parking limit is a good one for the majority of business owners and has proven itself over the years. 2 hours is a good compromise between allowing enough time to shop and not allowing one car to take up valuable space for too long. If some customers need more than 2 hours, it could be directed to the multitude of non-limited parking spaces within a block of downtown. Many people would be surprised to find there are scores of these places. What I mean is that if someone's coming in for a three-hour haircut, the person who sets the appointment could say, oh, by the way, you can find parking a block this way or a half a block this way. To us, it makes absolutely no sense to change to 4-hour parking. The whole premise that limiting the number of people, customers, that are able to park and shop downtown is counterproductive to a healthy business environment. No business owner in their right mind would say, please cut the number of customers in half that are allowed to shop in my store. This is obvious, but for illustrative purposes, let's say there are 100 parking spaces downtown. If everyone stayed 4 hours, it would bring 200 cars to downtown in an 8-hour day. If it stays as it is now, 400 cars could park in the same day. Is it better to have more customers or fewer customers? I mean, it's sort of like a dirty dirt. This next thing I'm going to bring up seems counterintuitive to my argument, but who parks for 4 hours anywhere? If I could ask anyone here, when's the last time you parked for 4 hours anywhere? You would probably answer that I park at home for 4 hours, I park where I work for 4 hours. What we're doing is we're opening up downtown for the people that work there, the people that are dumb enough to park in front of their businesses and say that their employees should park in front of their businesses are going to take those spots. Now, 4 hours into the day, they move to the next parking lot, spot, park 4 more hours. One person has taken up a parking space, taken it away from someone who can come to their own and spend some money. The other people, the people that live there, the people that live there now are going to say, this is great. Monroe is now giving me their blessing to take this spot for 4 hours, come out and park next door for 4 hours. I see them do it all the time. And they look at where the chalk mark is that old Don puts on the tire, and they try to park so it's underneath. I've seen it happen. Also, the suggestion is we have multiple parking restrictions, 4 hours, 4 hours, no parking, 15-minute loading zones. Without enforcement, it's a moot point. And with enforcement, how is one person going to go around town saying 2 hours, 4 hours, 15 minutes, ticket here, ticket there? It's not going to happen. It might look good on paper, but it's not going to happen. Also, there is some talk about selling some land, a big box guy coming in. There might be an opportunity to buy some property downtown. Maybe it'll be a parking area / festival area. I think that now to change the parking before that comes about is the wrong time. We ought to wait to see if that happens. If that happens, then what kind of parking can complement that lot that might be bought? So I know I'm going over my time. I'll hurry up. I'll just close it up right here. From our perspective, home to over 26 years of parking in downtown, as it stands, has been the best it ever has been. An indication to us that the present system is working. 4-hour parking will hurt us. As we are a very small business, even a loss of a few customers each day could make the difference between being able to pay bills or not, and us personally being able to pay our mortgage or not. At present, Monroe, mostly because of the economy, no other reason but the economy, is in a time of great change and flux. It is more difficult to run a business now than it ever has been since we started in 1987. Please do not upset this tenuous balance by limiting our customer base through making changes that have been suggested to you through a years-old study done by someone who has no vested interest in seeing Monroe thrive. A better way would be talking to and listening to present business owners and building owners in downtown. And I stress the word present. I believe that there are some people who have talked to you about changing parking, but if you look, you'll find out they don't have a business on downtown anymore. So I think the present people involved need to be the ones that are talked to. I've got some more stuff, but I think I've gone over my time. One thing I need to say is 15-minute parking, you might be able to say, well, look, I'll give you 15-minute parking. But to us, it means nothing. If all the others have turned into 8 hours or 4 hours, and the business owner parks here, the employee parks here, the tenant parks here, 15-minute parking doesn't make up for all that we lost to the four-hour parking. I would like to stay in the loop, so I would like to ensure that as things progress and maybe changes are being made, that there's a way to disseminate that information. Sometimes the newspaper or sometimes some ways that it's done that in the past might not work. So since it is a downtown parking issue, maybe each person on downtown could get a flyer saying what's going on. Because we were just dumbfounded when this showed up last week. So thank you for your time. Have a good evening.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I'm going to go sleep.
Paula Frontier.
Good evening. I'm Paula Frontier. My address is 17246 150th Street Southeast here in Monroe. And I'm here also to talk about the parking stuff. I have a business, Kitty Corner, from Andrew and Mary. And a lot like him, it was to the last minute before I knew about it. I found out by having somebody from the Snohomish Tribune called me and asked for a comment. So a lot of the businesses downtown, I don't feel, knew that the changes were going to be going into effect. My biggest point is I've been in business 6.5 years later, is there is no enforcement. So I don't care if you change it to all 15-minute parking to 2-hour to 4-hour. If there's no enforcement, it doesn't do a bit of good. There's Candido's that's across the street from me who parks their cars behind our building for weeks and a month. There's a car back there that's been there for 3 weeks right now. Every time I call, they come and slap a sign on it, and then they come and move it a couple feet and take the sign off, and it sits there longer. We also have the old hotel or a hospital that's next door to me that is now what we like to refer to the crack house, because there's more drug activity there than anything else going on. That the Reddit residents there park in front of my business for days, don't move. They park along the side of the buildings for days and behind where I noticed we're talking about Fremont, right behind the triangle building. Is all green, which is unlimited parking, which is usually where I would park my employees. But there's no parking there because that's where Candido's parks their car, extra overflow cars, or the people in the old hospital, they park there for permanently. I mean, there's like cars back there with tires that can't even work. And then the only other thing that I would say is some of the parking down Fremont over kind of by the KBQ and behind the back of the hospital. That's for our parking where some of those are residents, and it wouldn't really make sense to me to have that before our parking where behind my building is unrestricted. So I just noticed a couple things like that, but my biggest thing is I don't care if it changes. If it does, there's no enforcement. I've seen the parking lady once this year, and that was on a sunny day. So our joke is that it only gets enforced when the sun is shining. And we have people who work above us that park out front too, and we've written letters to them, our landlord has, and so there is no enforcement. So it doesn't matter if you're going to put your energy into changing it or leaving it. Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Apologize again, Steve. I'm sorry, I can't read.
Yeah, Steve Allman.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Right.
I see it now.
And I have this in writing. If I can I give it to you to hand it out?
Great.
And I'm not a great public speaker, so allow me to go ahead and read this, if you would. Thank you for your time. My name is Steve Allman, and I'm the owner of Pacific Power Batteries. It's on 212 East Main Street. And we bought the building there, beautiful building, and we're happy to be in Monroe. My family purchased the building about 15 months ago where we conducted Pacific Power Batteries, a retail battery and electrical store, and a professional office space above. Monroe is one of our five company-owned stores that we own and operate here in Washington. My first issue is I would request that you direct Monroe Public Works Department to immediately create as many as 6 delineated angled parking spaces on the south side of East Main between South Ferry and Woods. So that's right.
Your shadow, move your shadow to the right.
There's Ferry and Woods right here.
Right there. There's Ferry and Main. Yep. There's two little spots here. And I'm not quite sure at this moment in meeting if these are even painted. But this is, I believe, where the 7-Eleven is there, or the new 7-Eleven. Generation. And then there's a parking lot, and then there's the Monroe Mercantile, and then there's our building, and there's a driveway, and then there's Key Bank. So there's kind of a no man's land right in here. So we ask you to do something, create something. We have customers who come up, and they're often confused as to how to park in front of our stores, or even if they're allowed to park there. So waiting for the creation of a free right turn way down on US 2, in my opinion, is not a viable reason to delay the establishment of delineated parking on our block. More parking places allow more opportunities for customers to shop with us. We all know that. For our East Main block, we would like to see a mix of 30, 60, and 90-minute parking places in front of our stores, each about one-third of the total number created. 30-minute stalls allow adequate time for either of our usual retail customers. Between the Mercantile store and us, 30 minutes is just fine. A 60-minute slot would allow enough time for longer visits, a meeting at the bank, or a drop-in visit at our future upstairs office tenant. 90 minutes would allow enough time for casual shopping in either of our stores and a full one-hour visit with our professional upstairs tenant or at Key Bank. Rarely would any customer require more than 90 minutes to accomplish any combination of business tasks for our block. Second issue, create a resolution that allows a Chamber of Commerce approved committee, such as the Dream Team, to block by block gather and organize business consensus regarding timed parking zones that answer to the normal visiting time of their specific customers. The resolution would allow such a committee to submit parking proposals to the City Public Works Department from time to time for discussion and ultimately council implementation. For example, a dry cleaner would normally need 10 or 15 minute parking spaces. A retail store or stores should have a mix of 30 to 60 minutes. And professional consultants generally want 60 or 90 minute spaces. 2 hours and beyond, in my opinion, is too long for Monroe's current average shoppers or clients on busy downtown streets. Approximately timed parking spaces are the lifeblood of businesses. We need parking places to turn over in a manner that meets Monroe's current customer shopping habits. As downtown Monroe changes, then my proposed resolution would allow for future changes in the downtown parking requirements via the Chamber's formal request to the City. The public would be allowed time to comment, and over time, parking time zones can morph appropriately. If hundreds of overtime tickets have been issued for cars parked over 2 hours, I believe that those are employees or owners who are parked in the wrong places. The downtown busy street parking zones are for customers, not for the business employees or owners. 2 to 4 hour time parking, as in all cities, should be on side streets, away from the businesses that bring in dollars, jobs, and tax revenue. Business employees or owners and residents are free to park in the longer term 4 hour zones or all day by city issued parking permits. In business, every space, every inch is worth money. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any Bennett?
Good the chamber. I'm at 108 East Main Street, number 206, here in Reno. I want to just, first of all, thank the city for allowing the chamber to partner on the new Monroe Music Fest. I know we have Keith Brock with us tonight. I'm so excited that we were able to get the listing for this event up on the new ChooseMonroe.com visitor website under major events. Made me very proud to be able to see, you know, this partnership come together and for us to be able to list that in full color, and we can build that out with a gallery of photos and videos and things, really to get the world to be able to see. We link to his website, of course. This is a great partnership that's shaping up, and I think just a real testament to how the chamber, private businesses can work with local government, and some really exciting dynamic partnerships. I wanted to say a few things, not about parking per se, about the actual spaces and all of the work here. I know that from speaking with merchants that this is a situation that comes up frequently, you know, in sort of a five-year cycle. It is a complex situation with residential, people who live there in downtown who want to park there, and businesses that are service-oriented versus for, restaurants and retail. What I would like to just bring to the forefront today is the thing that could be different. And I know that this is on the city's agenda to start working on wayfinding. I think that the parking exists in downtown in the proportions that it is, and needs perhaps some tweaking to accommodate the various needs down there. But I think once a wayfinding study is completed and we can start to show people where they can park, I think that we'll start to see some better response. And I think that's the one part of this whole part that hasn't been really addressed yet, is getting our destination and our wayfinding, showing people where to come, where the experiences are, and where they can expect to find all-day parking, four-hour parking, two-hour parking, where all of those things are appropriate. I spoke with the Snohomish County Tourism Bureau this morning, and I was just delightfully surprised to find out that the city of Arlington went through their wayfinding. They had to pay for the study, but the tourism promotion area is footing the bill for all of the creation of their actual signs. I really hope that as a chamber we can work together with the city and try and secure funds like that so that we can ease the burden and get better signage. I really know that makes a huge difference. We've been done wayfinding studies in the city of Bothell and in Everett, just decoding the landscape for people, helping them know where to come to spend money, how to interface with us. I think it's just money really well spent. We do know that people will come for we call it the four times rule. If we have enough to keep them busy in a location for four times the amount of time it took them to get there, for example, if you drive to Monroe from 15 minutes away, you really do need to find an hour's worth of activity. If you drive from an hour away, you're going to want to find 4 hours of activity. Now, where you park in downtown and spend your money, that's up to us to help people know where to go without parking. The farther away from home we can get people to come to town, the more money we can get them to leave in our economy, which ultimately is our real goal. So I'm excited tonight, as I always am, about Monroe, that all of the ingredients are here, the passion is here, and I think that if we all work together on some applying some principles and figuring things out and having a dialogue going, that we really have a real recipe for success. So that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's all that I have. Who have signed up this evening to speak before council, but as always, I'd like to open up to members of the audience. If you are interested in speaking with council or directing some comments to council this evening, you may do so. I just ask that you approach the podium address for the record. Additional speakers this evening? Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for those who shared this evening. Valuable insight information for council's consideration. And just to clarify, so that there's no misunderstanding, no action has been taken and nothing has been finalized. This is a discussion item that we have here this evening. Okay, well, our partner in the Monroe Music Fest is here this evening. That is Mr. Keith Brock. And, Council, we just wanted to provide an opportunity for you to hear an update from Mr. Brock and from Mike Farrell in the Parks Department. With that, there's still a lot ahead of us, but I think there's been some significant steps forward towards the Monroe Music Fest. And with that, wanted to welcome Keith Brock to this evening's meeting and appreciate the opportunity to hear from you as to how things are going. So, Mr. Brock.
How are we doing?
Doing well.
Excellent, excellent. Well, yes, it's with great excitement and enthusiasm that that I'm able to introduce our groundbreaking work on the website. As you can see here, this is the front page of the website. And the website, of course, is basically our map of the entire event. Explains, who will be playing, although we're still solidifying the opening acts, but I just actually just came from John Popper's house, where he signed off on attending and performing for the event, so that was fantastic. He had been in the hospital for some time with a gallbladder problem, so he's very excited about it, looking forward to his chance to perform for the community for the very first time as well. So that's exciting. So that's our homepage. It's basically letting people know who's going to be there. Our event info page. Thank you so much to our technical people here, because without technical people, we couldn't be anywhere. And do you want to use that? Yes. Thank you. We have music that's on the site as well, and of course you can mute your speaker if you don't want to hear it, but just gives you a little something to groove to while you read about it. Explains, and this is just the start too. We're still every day we're working on the website, but it lets you know all the basic things, the music, the type of music that's going on, when, where, the seating, which of course is important to let people know that it's an outdoor show, and the seating, is by bringing either their own lawn chair or blanket, for that. We're currently hooking up the ticketing way in which people will purchase tickets, which will either be online and or they can come here and pick up a physical ticket here at City Hall. That will, by the time this publicly launches, that will have all that information. We are definitely letting people know that the event parking is for free, I think that's important. And also then coming down to our lower section, our food and beverage, which of course Doug Hobbs is in charge of, and he is solidifying these vendors currently for these roles. We've got the Buzz Inn in mind for barbecue, Sahara Pizza for pizzas and sandwiches, Xtapas for Mexican food, and Snoqualmie Ice Cream Company for ice cream. And some great end of the year party. And of course, we'll have the beer and wine garden, and he's going to be getting back to me, letting me know about that. Took the aerial map that was Micah. Who did this map?
Staff.
Great map. And this we'll make some revisions. But it's just showing the people, where the parking is, and we'll draw arrows on this and get stuff so that people will know, how they'll route to the event location and through the main entrance and entrances and whatnot and stuff. But I love the aerial map that was done, because I think it will help people understand kind of a more clear picture of how the event lays out. So that's a real nice. Like I said, our ticketing, we are currently working on right now setting that account up. But, you know, basically lets people know, you know, that the tickets are $20 for general admission. And I do believe, if I'm not incorrect, that we are going to let children 12 and under in for free.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll get that up there as well and whatnot. And then we... And then our last thing is just the directions page, you know, we have, once again, another aerial map. And, more music. you know, we'll let people know how to get there. So, and which will be able to, obviously, type in their address and bring them right to the location. So that's what we've gotten started so far, as well as solidifying our entertainers and whatnot, which has gone extremely well. And all of them are very excited about coming and doing this for the first time. And everything's looking absolutely fantastic so far. You know, I know we've done a good job. Many thanks to Mike Farrell for... helping keep the budget well in tune, and everything's gone marvelously. So
good. Mike, yeah, please, a couple of things. Thanks, Keith.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks. I really enjoy, and others were working with Keith. Enjoy working with him, and I just want to start off. On Monday, I was down in Olympia. I was attending a conference. It was a day conference. So actually, it was longer, but I was just there for the day. It was the Washington State Festivals and Fairs. And there was an actual session on creating a new festival or a new event. And in there, I'm just like jotting down notes and stuff. And it's like, wow, this is cool. We're doing all this stuff. So, I mean, it's really kudos to, you know, Keith and any other members and, you know, like high-road promotions and whatnot. Others that they're all contributing to putting together this new event. So, as Keith had mentioned, well, first he asked me, who did that? The aerial. And I said, staff. But, I mean, that was my knee-jerk. But Gary Watkins, he does a lot of that for us, for the parks, for, like, laying out events. So I just want, he's one of the employees in the Public Works Department. So he deserves some kudos for that. So as far as where we are is we have... shaped this as the city having an agreement with Keith, and, you know, with getting all the entertainment and the sound and the lights, and then we'll also have an agreement with High Road Promotions, Food Beverage, Beer Garden, and other operational and marketing and sponsorship assistance there. We're all doing a lot of things collectively, but there are some things we've lined up with those two that so we have draft agreements that we've been working on, and we'll be working with our city attorney and getting those finalized and signed off. So it's moving along, and it's really really pretty cool that the website here. This is, as Keith mentioned, it's not public yet, so it will be released fairly soon. I can say that we're on track with the tickets, where people can buy tickets in the beginning of April. So Diane has already set that account up. So we're just fine-tuning, making sure everything's going to work, and then we're going to go. And so, you know, the vendors, sponsors, that's all things we're working on. And we have found several items that as far as costs, expenses, that we've been able to reduce ways of reducing the costs. Some of it is some examples with High Road Promotions, for example. They're there at the fairgrounds. They have large events. Let's throw a couple items out there: fencing, porta potties. The rates that the city could get for our what we, you know, tournaments and whatnot aren't the same thing as what the larger. So by partnering, just shows that economies of scale and collaboration can really benefit the community. So thanks.
Welcome. Let me just say
there'll be more updates.
Yeah, there is more to come. We're looking at live
date in terms of marketing, potentially the first week of April, right?
Yes.
So having both postcard and posters available to for businesses locally to help partner with and getting the word out, as well as other venues throughout the region and so forth. So.
Absolutely, and like Mike was mentioning, the partnership with Doug over at the Speedway, you know, one nice thing is that they have a tremendous amount of traffic through the summer, and, you know, they're going to be, you know, passing that stuff out throughout the entire summer, and that'll be posted over there. And we're looking at, you know, as he said, possibly like 100,000 people, you know, before the event. And so I go, oh wow, you know, we're going to turn this into Woodstock, you know. we've got some great grassroots marketing, you know, things that are not that expensive to do, as opposed to like major airwave radio or television marketing, which can be, you know, expensive and whatnot. I think between the businesses in town, our partnership with the Speedway, that we're going to have more than ample advertising, you know, and that's, you know, there's the real key to the last part of the event. You know, it's just letting people know that this is available, and I think as long as people know it's there, they will come.
Yeah, if I might add also, just in thought overlook, the Executive Director of Chamber of Commerce is here, and Phanique Bennett, and she also has the chamber fired up to assist with, you know, spreading the word and opening opportunities up to businesses to become part of this as well. So, you know, I appreciate all the work that that she's doing assisting us as well in our endeavor. So
you beat me to the punch, as I mentioned. And Nick, it's been a lot of fun to have both the chamber, Doug and Tracy Hobbs from High Road, Keith, and staff working together collaboratively. I appreciate that point there to make this happen. And I think we're moving full steam ahead. Things are going, I think, smoothly, as smooth as a process like this can be. And word's already getting out, and people are anticipating a fantastic evening here, and we look forward to it. So thank you very much for the update. And the website does not go live until, or is it live yet?
It's actually live, but it's just not publicized, you know, yet. You know, like I said, every day is an ongoing, you know, tweak here, tweak there. In fact, I just saw a couple things in terms of lining some things up that need to be adjusted and stuff, and verbiage and a typo in there, and we definitely encourage all of you to look at it, and if you see anything or whatnot, like some of the things that are going to happen. For instance, the logo of Monroe there, that will actually be something that as people scroll across it, that when you click on it, I believe will go to the Choose Monroe website for the Chamber of Commerce, and will direct them, to the city there. So that'll be a nice, you know, thing. Once again, you know, the whole purpose of the entire show, concert, is for people to work together, and to, with doing that, that's how we make, you know, big things happen from nothing, you know. So of course, we want businesses and the chamber and everybody in town, you know, once again, to pull together with that concept and do those things, you know. So that'll be a nice thing, and then on our info page, the restaurants and stuff, they'll be able to have links and stuff to their businesses and things as well. So promoting the city and its businesses with this website as well. So.
Well, again, Keith, thank you very much. We really appreciate the update, the work that you and Anik, Mike, and Doug Tracy have done on this. And as I say, we're moving forward to what I anticipate will be a very successful
yes.
Event. And
Definitely. And I can say that without giving too much away on the production end of it, because I want to for people to be to really be something that they're surprised with. But the sound and lighting have gone extremely well, especially in the lighting department. We've got an amazing show that it's, not only are we doing this for the first time here, but this is going to be something that people will definitely be talking about, and without a doubt.
Great.
So, all right. Very excited about that.
Very good. Well, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brad. Exciting times ahead. We're looking forward to that. Okay. If you didn't catch that, it's tomorrowmusicfest.com. I see that Gamble's already on the side. All right, we're moving on then to the consent agenda. Anything, Councilmember Gamble?
2A.
All right. 2A is now moved. Councilmember Gearing?
I'd like to move to approve the consent agenda items 1, 2B, and 3.
Second.
No, excuse me, 2A. Oh, excuse me, yes, 2B. All right, motion has been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember... Sorry, would you amend your motion to approve consent agenda items 1 and 2B?
I will amend my motion to approve consent agenda items 1A, 1B, and 2B. The second will also approve that. We're not doing 3.
3A.
That's what we can.
3A can go to us, sir.
Oh, and 3A?
Yeah. Okay. It's 3B, because I want to pull.
Oh. You're pulling 3B. Yeah. And 3A.
All right. Motion's been made and seconded. First by Councilmember Gearing, seconded by Councilmember Camp, to approve 1A, B, 2B, and 3A. All right. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. All right. Let's talk about 3B first, if you like. And Fred.
Just a real quick thing. We've looked at the cost of the Fremont project, and it's fairly in the number, the $2.2 million we told you a long time ago, but it includes $175,000 for street trees. The reason it's so expensive is because the tree grades that go around them are $4,000 a piece. So I just wanted to make sure that council was aware of that, and if the council would like to continue down that road with putting the tree grates in now rather than making it possible to do it later as more development goes on down there, the council had an opportunity to weigh in on that. So if you don't want to do anything, we'll go ahead and put them in, and if you'd like to hold off and not put them in right now and put them in later, we'll change it and do it that way. So
So pros and cons. I'm trying to figure out what the actual question you're answering.
Putting the tree grates in now and getting it done, finishes the project and does all the street amenities that were in the downtown plan. The other, the con is that is there sufficient business down there right now to maintain them so that they don't, fall apart before any real business goes down there to be nice looking. Are the people who are adjacent to the property, to the street frontage right now, going to be taking care of them, or is it going to be a maintenance headache for the city?
Taking care of the trees,
both. The trees, grates, both. Yeah, the grates probably aren't easily broken, so that's probably not a problem. But the trees themselves, is it going to look worse to have a bunch of dead, broken off trees down the street rather than nothing?
And I guess there's already tree maintenance that goes on from our parks and public works. Why wouldn't that apply here? Since most city-owned trees and city-owned grates on a city-owned street.
Yeah, most places.
I'm trying to think, why wouldn't we be taking care of that?
Most places we expect the property owners to help out with the thing, as opposed to going down, watering them and things like that. That's supposed to be done by the adjacent property owners.
supposed to, okay, I guess I don't remember that that was part of the plan. So we're just asking them to, they're required to.
Just like you're supposed to mow the planter strip in front of your house.
Okay.
You know, so that kind of thing. And notice that, yeah, okay, so, yeah. So and with recent budget cuts and things, you know, we've cut down on doing that, like adjacent to Franklin's Boulevard. And so that's, you know, people have come to the city council to talk about those kind of things. You know,
so lack of maintenance. So comparable along Main Street now, that was something that we, the zones are supposed to take care of. I mean, the park benches are the city benches.
Right, yeah.
The trash cans are city.
The only place that has
trees, but
the only place that has trees are the
flower pots that hang down. I mean,
quarters, right? It's just that's just expanding the amount of work that needs to be done.
Okay, so the city does all that now. Yes. My thinking, why wouldn't we trim trees?
Right. No, it's just
trying to figure out what you're looking for.
It's expanding the amount of work that the staff needs to
do. If we were to do the whole thing now,
you do it now as opposed to
waiting.
Right.
We're going to
get it done.
Maintenance anyway, in my mind.
Okay.
Moving forward, I guess, as long as we have it in the budget. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion.
Okay.
Councilor Williams?
Just so I'm clear, what's the added cost you're talking about?
$175,000.
And roughly how many trees are we talking
40.
About? I'm a fairly simple guy. That seems really expensive.
Yes. It's $4,000 for each tree grade. So the trees themselves are only $17,000, but putting the tree grades in is $162,000.
Not a piece. Total. Trees total.
Yeah, not each tree.
Kind of tree
So 40 trees are $17,000.
Correct.
And then the grades are $4,000 a piece. We need 40 of those.
Right.
Was that part of the original budget? Was that part of the original project? Did it include that? Did it come in a lot higher than we expected?
That was part of the original project, but at that time we didn't realize how expensive tree grades were.
What are our alternatives? Do we have any other than do them or don't do them? Is there anything else that can go there besides trees?
Not really for the green, you know, living things kind of. The idea was to, if we left it out and just put in expansion strips in the square, and so when future development went in for hopefully the revitalization of that area, the developers at that time could easily pull out that section of concrete in and put in the trees and the tree grates.
Okay. So there's really not a good alternative.
No.
Benches versus trees.
Yeah, that's not.
And what's the effort? Let's say we did everything except for the trees and the tree grades today.
Mm-hmm.
What's the ramifications of adding them later as business comes in down there? Are we tearing stuff up? Are we chipping concrete?
We tear the concrete out, and we put the concrete in with expansion joints in the area where the trees were to go, so the concrete could be easily removed without saw cutting or taking out large chunks of concrete and repouring.
I'm just doing some math here. I think it would look better with trees. Mm-hmm. I know if you came and asked me if I would buy a $425 tree from you, I would say no. I don't know what kind of trees these are, how big they are. But just, again, being a simple guy, that seems crazy. And then on top of that, another $4,000 for the grade. These are $4,400 trees. By the time they're all said and done, I would probably vote in favor of not doing them at this point. And when business comes in, if they want to add trees or we decide later on, that's only one perspective. I don't know what the downside is. It still seems like the street would be a huge improvement over what it is today with what's already happening. Save that money rather than spend it. Do we already have that budget set aside for this project?
That money is budgeted. The only thing that's going to be a little bit over budget is the water portion of the project, replacing the water line. But that money is available in the bank.
Okay, so. All right, well, that would just be my recommendation.
All right, Councilmember Hamford.
Thank you. I tend to agree with Councilman Williams, although it would help probably sell and bring more business to that area. I've driven down that road, and I can't see the benefit of having expensive trees down that road. With some of the other things I've seen down that road, I'm concerned with how long it will last. I hate to spend that much money, and then a car runs one over in an hour, you know, going backwards. So I'd recommend waiting until we actually have business there. Who knows, maybe whatever business or whatever goes in down there, a tree wouldn't really look good or be what they need. Maybe they need park benches or, you know what I mean? That's a good point. Thank you.
Councilor O'Gee.
No, thank you. So $4,000 is great. That's the cost. There's 40 of them. That's $160,000 just for grates. And you know, the trees are 17. That's a much more doable number. Can we get a little bit more creative with what we put around the tree, if anything? Or could something be put in later that, you know, doesn't cost $4,000? Something that looks, I mean, another idea where we can get the trees in, have them, you know, look nice. I mean, I think it will still make the street look nice. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's $160,000 for grates.
Right.
That seems excessive.
They're very,
I'm all about the trees.
They're very expensive, and they also have to, you know, meet certain standards so that they're not trip hazards and they can support a certain weight and things like that. So you just can't put pieces of plywood in there kind of thing. You know, it would be much cheaper. Mm-hmm. So
perhaps things can be planted around the trees.
Trees in big pots or something instead of tree grates. I don't know what the cost difference of that would be. So
the grate really just plays into the look and feel.
Look and feel and safety, because you can't have a hole in the sidewalk.
It's a constant, as opposed to a step down.
Yeah, or you know, trip hazards and things like that. So
perhaps the level of it, right? If you just brought that up level with everything else, to me that's be a little bit cheaper. I'd like to figure out a way to you know, make it to start to look nicer. I understand Councilmember Hannaford's point. I mean, you know, right now it does seem. To me, that seems like something you can do in advance, because then it makes the area more attractive for people to come in and start doing it. But if we don't have to spend $160,000 and we end up spending $17,000, I think that's a doable proposition. I guess I would want to have more. Think it would be some more creative ideas. $4,000 per grade.
Brad, how could we move forward this evening? With 3B, how can we move forward with what amendment? Just to bring back an option?
Well,
other options for...
That really won't work if we want to get the project done this year, because it's time to go up a bit for it. What we could do is do the trees and tree grates as an alternate for right now, and if we can find anything that's... interesting that will, you know, sort of do the same thing but not cost as much, we can bring that back to the council and do an addendum. So we have like about a month to fit that process in, but we need to go out and bid to get the process started.
Okay, so with that, council, where would you like to go? So if I clarify, move forward. Paul, thank you.
I feel compelled to make a couple of comments. I've been involved in a lot of downtown projects like this, design, construction, so forth. I would encourage, tree grates are a problem, they're expensive. I would encourage you to think, though, in terms of finding a solution that would allow the trees to be planted, because this is the signature beginning project for downtown. It's going to set the tone for other streets. And granted, there's some properties there that are in need of redevelopment. I think we need to take a leap of faith to spend the public money for the public improvements to set the stage to kind of incentivize, give some better encouragement to redevelop the properties. There may be some alternatives to a tree grade, but saving those trees, I would hesitate to see removing the trees from now and say we'll do it later. If it's done piecemeal, one at a time, it's like putting in short pieces of sidewalk and never actually getting something completed. So for the appearance of the initial project and for longevity and just really that consistent look that we're trying to establish, by all means, let's look for an alternative to tree grades. But I think Brian has the right idea. It creates us an alternate and also have another idea for that bid package. But we wouldn't abandon the idea of trees altogether. I like trees.
Speaking as a landscape architect, right?
Speaking as a landscape architect. Next month is landscape architecture month.
So to clarify then, Brad, what are you looking for from us tonight that we can at least get you started on continuing on the project minus the trees?
Might I suggest the motion?
Please.
authorize the solicitation of bids for the Fremont Street Utility Replacement Project with the installation of trees and tree grates as an alternate. And that would keep us moving, and we can bring additional information back to you if we can find something that's different for tree grids. Don't count. Cost $4,000 a piece, and if someone's somebody bids on them and it comes in really cheap, we can.
Second. All right. Motion's been made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Gamble to approve the motion as recommended by Mr. Fowler.
I'd like to offer a friendly amendment to that. I'd like to make sure the trees are included. The trees wouldn't be optional. The grates would be optional, would be my preference, if that's something the maker and the second would agree to. I would want to make sure we can go ahead and get them planted, but be creative about the grates, leaving that optional to a cheaper
video. Well,
I didn't think that's what I heard this motion was. That's why I'm asking for a friendly amendment.
Well, let's clarify, because in the motion, what you're saying is that if there's an alternative, such as a pot, somebody recommends, is that what you were saying?
Well, when you bid projects, you can say you're going to do, A through Z, and this last thing is we may or may not include, depending on how much it costs. So that's what my motion was for. And that would give us... Leaving that in that way would give us the time, about a month, in order to find out something that was cheaper than the tree grates as specified that we have downtown now. Then we could amend that in the bid package. That would still allow the project to keep moving along.
Is that a separate process from the bid? Or is that?
Yes. I mean, staff would go work and see if we can find something, and if we can find something that's cheaper, we can add that to the bid.
That's the grate, not the tree.
Do an amendment.
Is it cheaper grate?
Try the cheaper grate or something, yes.
That's the reason I made the tree isn't the part that we're going out to find cheaper. We're looking for a creative solution. If it's not necessary, if that's what the motion includes, then that's great. I didn't think that it did, so... if that's your understanding of what the motion is, then I will withdraw my friend.
So, Brad, do you understand the motion to say that we are including trees regardless?
Including trees, it's, yes.
We're trying to find a cheaper version.
Right.
Or,
great. That's perfect. Thank you.
But what if we come back, or a bid comes back, and says, rather than grates, we recommend that they go into, pots, and the pots are...
It won't be that... We'll be back to the council before then with additional information, and at that time we can decide what to do, because I'll have to do some research on the pros and cons of doing street trees without grates, then see if there's anything available, and then the council can decide at that time if they want to include trees and what risks they would be in just doing just trees.
Any other questions then for Brad or Thomas?
All understood? All right. Okay. Motion's been made then. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. At this time, we will move on.
2A.
2A. 2A. Oh, yeah, to 2A and have Councilmember Gamble out of abundance of caution is leaving the chambers, and so a motion to approve item 2A.
So,
second. A motion made by Councilmember Campbell and Councilmember Davis to approve the consent agenda item 2A. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, Councilmember Gamble will now return to the chambers. At this time, we do have the need for an executive session. I'll turn to the city attorney.
Mayor, question.
Yes, sir.
Is there a need to do the executive session now, or can we move it to the end since we have audience members that are probably interested in one of the topics to discuss? I don't know if it's pressing or not, so I'm just offering this suggestion.
It would be better to move the item that you think the members of the audience would like to hear, but the executive session needs to be in the order prior to discussion items or new business items. So we can either move the discussion on downtown parking ahead of this.
That would be my suggestion.
I would second that.
All right, I don't know that we need a motion, but do we need a motion to move an item?
There has to be
just consensus. Yeah. All right, if there's consensus, we'll move the item and go there first. So, all right, then. We will then go to new business item number two, the discussion on downtown parking. Feinberg would be presenting tonight, but just as you know, again as a side note to those who are here this evening, as some had mentioned, there has been a lot of discussion with regards to downtown parking over the years, a number of comments have been passed along to both myself and staff for the last year and several months, specifically downtown parking. And so, as a discussion item, item for council consideration, a recommendation has been made by staff. At last meeting, we had the request that information would go out to businesses or to the business community so that we could receive some input, which we did tonight, thankfully. But with that said, no final decision has been made prior to this evening, and there may not even be a decision this evening as well. We are here to discuss downtown parking and the numerous options that are available to us. So at this time, I will hand the mic over to Fowler, so to speak.
Okay. I think you covered it.
Yeah.
Here's a proposal about the parking that you tweaked a little bit. Last time we talked about this in February. You know, it's just a proposal that I brought towards you just to get the conversation rolling. You changed some parking on Main Street to 4 hour from last time and got rid of the restriction in front of the residential properties on South Ferry, made that unlimited. And you've heard some comments tonight from residents and business owners. And so, what's your plan?
And so moving forward, I mean, a recommendation has been made by staff, but tonight is certainly an opportunity for council to take into consideration comments that were made this evening, and or if you have any other input or information that you like to share, do that as well. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate hearing from the members of the audience and business owners that spend all day long down in these areas. The questions in my mind, if you asked me or my family, how often or how long do you need to shop downtown? The answer is in line with what we brought up tonight. anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour and a half, maybe tops. And so as far as I'm concerned, that was a good point that was brought up. Understanding that the destination development goal is to bring people from outside of town so that they're spending more than that short amount of time here. I'm wondering if we're ahead of schedule by changing the parking hours when maybe there isn't. And I'm speaking purely from a resident that shops locally, and so, you know, maybe there are statistics out there from the business owners that you do have people come from out of town that spend quite a bit of time there. I don't know. Wondering if maybe we should wait until the downtown core is stronger and built up more, and there's actually more things to do, more ways to spend money, and then realize, okay, we need to maybe put some parking in changes to take place. The other question in my mind that Mr. App brought up was about the parking / festival / market type area that we're looking at doing at some point here downtown, and maybe taking his suggestion, which was to maybe look at that in place and then look at making changes to complement that. And I guess I really appreciate hearing from the business owners and would love to hear more in the future. In my mind, there's no rush on this topic at all, unless there's deadlines or something that I'm just not aware of. So I would definitely want to hear more from the business owners, and love to hear your thoughts as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Pan.
Thank you. I echo your sentiments, Councilman Hanford. I believe we need a little bit more information about this, and some of the comments I heard from business owners, especially just walking in tonight, I have heard about questions in certain parking areas and certain habits of people in parking areas, which I believe need to be addressed. One recurring theme, though, I keep hearing about is enforcement, or lack thereof. I've yet to hear someone say that we're too strident in our enforcement of our parking policies in town. And from the sound of it, just from what I heard tonight, we have abandoned vehicles, essentially, in town, in some of the free parking areas. I'd like to see how the city would address that before we go forward in any parking policy. I believe that's a big issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Gamble.
Yeah. Councilman Gamble, I echo your comments there. I think the data that I would like to see, because if I recall right, Brad, the previous map, before we had what is now and what's proposed.
In the first proposal or the existing purpose?
Existing.
Yellow, orange.
Yeah, so I guess my question, and you know, when that came up at the topic today, or the comments from citizens.
That's existing.
I guess my question is, okay, well, with that in regard, if there really truly is a push for 4-hour parking, then we should, how many citations have we given for 2-hour parking, for lack of?
123.
And how long?
That was this year. I was in your cover sheet.
It was in the cover?
No, it was in the article in the newspaper. I read it somewhere today.
So I guess I would be interested in seeing some of that, you know, data as far as 2-hour, you know, citations that show, you know, in over a course of time, you know, right? It would be interesting to see pre, you know, hit of the economy through the, you know, the downturn, and then now that we're coming out of it, is there really a push? But yeah, I mean, I think it's imperative that we have the business as a part of our decision process. And it was good to hear from folks.
Gimble, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I guess one of the questions would be is, what forum would the council like to have in order to hear from and or obtain more input from business participation? Is that a separate forum? Is that something that council would like to lead? Is that something that the council would like to delegate or ask somebody else to lead? And those are all the parts of the question. And you know, I hope you understand that us raising the question, you know, a couple weeks ago was specifically so that we could begin to gain a better handle on, because staff and myself, and I think even many of you have had tidbits of information and singular conversations throughout your tenure here on council as well as mine. And so that's a great point in what you've made it. But the question is, how would you like to do that? So some consideration or thought or some direction would be helpful as we go forward here. So you still have the floor if you'd like to respond. If not, we'll move on to another council member.
Well, I think there was even a suggestion that was brought forth. We have, whether it's we have partnerships with the chamber or Dream, in conjunction with who's already on our transportation committee. who's our chair?
That's Councilmember Campbell.
Taking a look at that, maybe that's a pushing aside. Maybe that's a way to engage. And just at one spot.
Okay. All right, are we good? Councilmember Davis.
Just going on my own experience in downtown, and that goes back over 20 years. I'm trying to remember when I ever parked down there for 4 hours. I can do 4 hours in town, but it starts down at maybe Big Five and goes to Fred Meyer's, and then up to Lowe's, and downtown for a haircut. Back down to across the street. So I've never parked in one place. And I so I'm trying to get a grasp on 4 hour parking places. Who's really going to use those? How effective are they going to be? And so it's good hearing from some of the business owners. I've been to those businesses, a couple of those businesses. So I know what they're referring to, and I guess what I need is a little more convincing as to what the 4 hour parking place would be providing for them, and what are the positives to it. I just personally I don't experience it, so I'm thinking, what is the advantage there? And then we hear some of the businesses tonight that sort of goes along with my thinking on it. So, if there's more information out there, then I would definitely like to hear what that is. Because right now, I'm not convinced that 4 hour parking is the way to go. So.
And certainly, as directed by council, we can utilize some type of form to gather more of that information, unless you'd like to have it all come back to council as part of the hearings. To respond to what you've said, I would agree, and I think most council members and most people in the audience today would agree that local residents probably aren't spending 4 hours in downtown. Most local residents probably would make a quick trip to a location downtown and back, as you said, to others' locations. The 4 hour parking is recommended as part of a destination development. And I think Chamber Director Nate Bennett mentioned that today, that somebody comes from an hour away, which is the intention and desire that Monroe is a destination location. Ideally, they would spend four times the amount that they drove to get here. So if somebody comes from the south, are we there yet? No. I think a cover page. Yes.
they're going to come to town. They're not going to be, they're certainly not going to be able to go to Dell's and then over to Fred Meyer's from a parking place in town. They're going to be moving in their car. So they're essentially going to be doing the same thing. In my mind, they're going to be doing the same thing that I do when I come and spend 3 hours in town. They're going to be downtown, so they're going to be driving to do that. There's parking at all those places that they'll be taking advantage of. And I see the recommendation, and they say that the recommendation for the destination development study. Are we there yet? No, we're not. But the idea is to try to promote. I understand that. I don't know. Are we close enough to really do that yet, or are we just going to be causing more problems by changing it now?
Great questions. I look forward to your answer. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. When this came up a couple weeks ago, I think, I don't know how it got on our agenda, but it was never something that as council we discussed a pressing need. It kind of was brought forward to us, much like it is tonight, which is, you know, we understand that the current situation doesn't help everybody, so this is kind of what was presented. What's missing from to me is a clear definition of the problem that we're trying to solve, other than it doesn't work for everybody, but nothing that we ever do works for everybody. So I guess I would like to know what's the clear definition of the problem we're trying to solve, and what's the desired outcome that we're hoping to achieve, and then see if we can come to, you know, the same conclusions. Because from what I've heard and from what I perceive, we really have four problems. We have the biggest one being the lack of available parking. I mean, if there was unlimited parking down there, nobody would care about what we're doing here. So that's the pressing issue. And to me, going from 2 hours to 4 hours compounds that problem. You know, it magnifies that problem. It doesn't make it less visible. The other problem we hear is that people don't view downtown as a destination, and that's the thing that we're trying to solve. And, you know, the ratio we heard of the 1 hour drive time, you want to spend 4 hours here. I would agree that that's probably a good ratio, but I don't know that people are driving from an hour away to come to downtown today. So again, the problem is, what can we do to change that perception? You know, whether that's the festival lot or the, you know, something else along those lines, but changing the parking regulations isn't going to make that happen. The other two things Councilman Camp touched on, which is the lack of enforcement, and I don't know if that's perceived or if it's reality, but several people brought it up. I'm also concerned about that because we don't have parking meters. We have to have somebody, you know, driving around and seeing that. So I don't know from the police department how easy that is to do. And so that's a problem. And then lack of, well, the people that are actually abusing the system. You know, the system's not designed so that you go park for 2 hours and then move one spot and stay there another 2 hours. But that's happening. But because of the problem, seems like that's kind of a loophole. At the end of the day, businesses just want to know that people can get to their business easily. And if I have a business that has somebody else parking in my parking spots, I'm not going to be in favor of them staying there. So it just seems like we probably need a more clear definition of the problem and what our desired outcomes are as a starting point, rather than jumping into this. Some of the things that we heard, some of the recommendations from the gentleman from the battery store, I thought made sense. I don't know who the right committee is for that, what the right answer is, but it seems like it's a deeper discussion that will happen in one of the council meetings, and maybe a, you know, an outside independent committee of people that have a vested interest down there. I mean, if you're eating your own cooking, you're going to be more inclined to come up with a better solution. So getting the chamber and Dream and some of the business people who have been down there for a while, I think together, and maybe come with a recommendation, to me would carry more weight than me trying to make that decision. I mean, I'm smart enough to know that hair salons don't survive with 15-minute parking and bakeries don't survive with 4-hour parking. But aside from that, I can't tell you I have the best plan. But I do know, as a business owner, I want people to know where I'm at, be able to get to me easily. And I think that's what we're hearing from business owners here. I'm concerned that this doesn't help that problem. So.
Councilmember Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple things. Brad, I heard one concern about how notification or when notification was sent to area business owners. Was that you? And
as
just
I
tell us how that was
reported
sent
to the council 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, the week afterwards, that we sent out 1,878 emails. The newsflash blast that we sent out also contacted the chamber, the monitor, and tried to contact Dream, but after 3 days, their email came back, bounced. So,
okay. So we didn't act, there wasn't specific notification
No door-to-door deliveries, no.
There was no actual door-to-door deliveries, okay. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say maybe we might want to do that a little different next time. Or at least, since we're just starting the process, you know, include them now, just so misperceptions that we've already made up our minds, which we haven't, so we can eliminate those kind of things. The information I've heard today from the folks that came is super valuable, because I've heard some of the problems before with people just moving their cars one spot, that kind of thing, and they're violators. Actually, no matter what we set up, there's going to be violators, which is unfortunate, which goes right into what others have talked about, which is enforcement. And that involves the police department, so I think that kind of compounds this issue as well. We had talked about, you know, people in front of salons, it'd be nice to have longer available parking in front of salons than some of the other places that we've talked about. But we've heard that business owners who know that people park their cars for days back behind, and I love that triangle building. It's really cool. If we are talking about doing unlimited there, back behind, it sounds like there may already be an issue there that perhaps we weren't aware of. And unlimited just may not be the best. So certainly further discussion on each of those areas that we've heard. I don't know the best way other than some sort of a, certainly inviting the business owners along Main Street at a minimum, but at a bigger area to come up with a form in which we can get that feedback, whether it's online. There's got to be a way to do that, so I guess we can discuss that, but I really think that needs to happen as well. And some of the others touched on it as well. Would it be premature to do this right now? I have a feeling that it is. I understand the long-term goal when you want to get people here and a neat vision for, when this is that destination, you want people to come and stay and leave their revenue or leave their whatever the term you would spend their money, but worded it in a much nicer way. Increase the revenue of the town, as it were, downtown. So I certainly want to support that anyway. It sounds as though as much yellow as is proposed here is too much. And so we need to have further discussion on this. I don't know how to do it, but certainly more specific input from businesses is it sounds like that was missing, and we certainly need to do that moving forward, capturing what might and might not work. Again, that can change too. There's a business here that's now of a certain type, and it may be different in, say, 3 years in Monroe. So it's never going to work for everyone, but we can certainly do the best that we can to make it work for as many people as possible. I appreciate the other comments. I agree with you. Thank you.
And the input from business isn't missing. It just hasn't been had yet. There's no final decision that's been made. We're still.
Oh, I apologize for wording it that way. Then, yeah.
That would make the assumption that something has already been decided, which it hasn't. And so, as several council members have stated, having additional input from business would be nice.
Absolutely.
And so, I'm hoping that Councilmember Camp, who's the chair of the Transportation Committee, might have a recommendation as to how the process would go forward from this point. Councilmember Camp.
As a matter of fact, I do. In the interest of saving council time, I was thinking that through the Transportation Committee, we reach out to two groups or two organizations that have a big footprint or presence in downtown, and that would be Dream and Chamber, and have them do the polling and help define the problem. So we'll do the Transportation Committee reaching out to them. They could report back to the committee, and using that information, report back to the council. first part. The second part, enforcement, that's more on the executive side. You or whoever you assign to do a review of current enforcement policies and find out, is there a problem? Is it a perceived problem? You're just dealing with anecdotal evidence and find out what, if any, needs to change. That would be my proposal.
Second.
Are you on that committee?
Nope. Absolutely. Well, I think that's very well said. Councilmember Williams.
Something to add on that. The other thing that would be helpful is identifying the unintended consequences. You know, that things like, you know, if we make recommendations like, let's put 4-hour parking in front of the hair salon, and then, you know, I want to make sure what doesn't happen is that's where all the 4-hour parking goes, and now someone that wants to go to the hair salon is parking 6 blocks away as an unintended consequence. That I just think that as part of this process, we should be trying to identify those as well.
Yield for a statement.
Yes.
I believe the two groups that I mentioned have a big enough contact area, they would be able to determine that a lot better than I can, since I never go to a hair salon. So, if they would be up to it, and we can discuss that either through the transportation committee at a later date or stop by offices at their convenience. But I know that two of the main characters are here tonight, so I'm seeing some head nods, so I'm pretty happy with that.
Well, I think it's a great idea, and we'll reach out to both the chamber and to Dream. Maybe have a representative from each join the transportation committee. We can ask for a suggested date during the council member reports, as well as the extended agenda discussion this evening, and then reach out to them as with regards to the enforcement issue. Deputy Chief Bernard is here this evening. I believe he's heard loud and clear that council would like to have some information with regards to traffic enforcement. And the simple, not the easy, or the simple, not the desired answer may be that we don't have the number of officers that we once did, which is true at this point. But we'll bring more information to you.
If I may?
Yes.
If we recognize that we don't have the staff for it, at least we recognize the problem. And if we can address it, great. If not, at least we recognize the problem.
Yes. Very good. Okay, well, with that said, then we'll move on to next items in the agenda. And I'm sure that members of the audience here tonight who are here to, with regards to this item, discussion shall continue. And we look forward to a joint and collaborative effort in providing the best solutions for the downtown stakeholders. Okay. With that said, I would like to ask Brad if you might grab the light. I'll now turn to our city attorney. At this time, we do need an executive session, and I will have our city attorney provide the RCW's descriptions and recommended time for the executive session.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Pursuant to RCW 42:30.10.1I. The council will now convene an executive session for the purpose of discussing potential litigation with legal counsel. The executive session will last approximately 30 minutes, after which the council will take action in the session.
Okay, with that said, we will now go into the executive session. Just deep breath.
Okay.
We're back in regular session, and we'll now move on to our new business items. Number one, which is a discussion on proposed ethics code amendment. And that would be Jordan.
Okay, so about 6 or 7 months ago, the ethics board came, asked about some changes that they thought there were some issues. Some text of the subsection was inadvertently repealed several years ago during a previous ethics code amendment. That is my purpose. That's the scope of why I'm here tonight. Is I worked, Edie's a staff liaison. Her and I teamed up and worked with Zach more because I feel that it's staff's job to work with a our city attorney, not our commissions. So Edie and I worked with Zach to give you guys a better, repeal the other information that was conflicting and then replace it with information that wasn't conflicting. So the first document, number one, is the information that Zach included that he wants to replace. New business 1.2 is in the highlighted portions on pages 4 and 5 are where that would fit into the existing ethics ordinance that was adopted. We need to create anything?
No.
Keep me honest? All right.
Okay. City Attorney Lau.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just for clarification, this is, as I understand it, just a housekeeping amendment, and you'll recall the conversation that the council had last summer with the ethics board, specifically the ethics board's chairperson. This was the main preliminary amendment that had been recommended for the council to address, and its effect is simply to unring the bell on an inadvertent amendment that apparently occurred several years ago through either a codification error or a Scrivener's error or some other mistaken action. The wrong subsection in the city's ethics code was inadvertently deleted or replaced. And
right.
According to the ethics board chair, this proposed action in front of you tonight essentially corrects that mistake.
Thank you, Councilor.
Thank you. Just get straight to the point, I'm not in favor of making only this change. There are so many things in this document that need to change, and really this is just putting a Band-Aid on something that doesn't really fix anything. I was looking at what we'd be putting back in, for example, and I think that's that Section E, which is actually something that is, to me, is quite confusing. I don't think provides any clarity whatsoever, and quite frankly, I'm glad it was inadvertently removed. I think for the time being, we need to leave it out anyway, until we can have some other changes made, and quite frankly, in this instance, I really think it needs to be handled by the city attorney. For example, our conflicts of interest section, which is 252040, is extremely vague. It's really hard to tell what a conflict of interest is or isn't, so much so that when we do the bills every other week, Councilmember Gamble has to leave, out of an abundance of caution leaves. Quite frankly, I think that's ridiculous. He has no financial interest whatsoever in anything with his particular company, and there are changes that need to be made in that section so that that type of thing, so that the bills, the company you work for, you don't have anything to do with the city business. There should be no reason why he has to leave the room for things like that. I would seek to have our city attorney go through that entire section 252040 for conflict of interest. Produce for us over the course of time a section of conflicts of interest that actually addresses that, so that council member, not just for council member Gamble, there may be others of us in the future who have the same thing, but it's just not necessary. It's not what this, I would think, would be intended to do. And as council member Williams has said in the past, you know, I wouldn't have thought the intent was if you work at Lowe's and the city has a contract with Lowe's and you buy a box of screws, and then you have to pay the bills, that you would have to leave the room. And essentially, that's what happens every week, or every other week when the bills are here. That's just one of many things. So I, quite frankly, before we vote on any of this kind of stuff, I think we need to have the conflicts. And quite frankly, you know, rewriting the entire thing would be great. The terms cloud of ambiguity have been used before to describe this particular ordinance, and it being full of self-contradiction. I agree with those comments. It is not a well-written document, and I think it actually adds more confusion to what a conflict of interest is than not. So I think we would be well served by having our city attorney provide verbiage throughout this entire section rather than just adding in Section E. And I do appreciate the work that you guys did to actually produce some language that actually makes sense, so it's no longer a Band-Aid fix for these kind of things, but it's actually a document that when you read it, it makes sense. It's in line with state it's in line with state law, and so that it's not an issue at all. And someone can read it and say, okay, yeah, that is or that isn't a conflict of interest. So situations like Councilmember Gemmell or any of us in the future, any future council member who may have some very remote thing, removing the ambiguity so that we no longer have to have, quite frankly, silly situations like that, you know, essentially out of fear. You know, it's not good for business, and quite frankly, I think it's a waste of our time. Again, I also have concerns about whether some sections are even enforceable, and whether now is the right time to talk about those or not. I think a full review of this entire ordinance by our attorney, specifically the conflict of interest section, but probably just the entire thing, and a full-blown review of, you know what, here's what needs to change, here's what would make this clear, here's what would make this not self-contradicting, and here's what would make this well-written. And at that time, we can go over those perhaps proposed changes and then vote those into not considering getting rid of ethics boards and things like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about actual definitions and what in the world is really a conflict of interest. And it's just not clear reading through these things. So those are my thoughts on the matter. Just putting a band-aid on this tonight, I don't think gets us anywhere. Let's do it right and have a full wheel deal, make a change, and then be done with it. And hopefully we wouldn't have to worry about it anymore. So my thoughts. Thank you.
Question to the city attorney, Lowell, if I may, on behalf of the city and staff as well.
Mr. Mayor, could I interject one thing?
Sure.
Since we haven't reached the council format changes yet, I'd like to make a motion that we extend past 10 o'clock.
All right.
Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Hamford to extend the meeting past 10 p.m. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Councilmember Camp. Assuming that they might have some recommendations for us a little later. City Attorney Lell, if I might, it has been said often over many years that this ordinance is full of conflicting ambiguity. It's cloudy, it's sloppy, it's there are portions that may not be defendable. It's unclear, things like that. Is there an option? Should council move forward to request a full review, I guess, by you or a member of your staff? Is there an option available that would still? Because it seems to me that this the ethics ordinance is so disjointed and cloudy and ambiguous and things like that it may not even be enforceable, and it's gone over the top, or I don't know. It's kind of, these are just words that have been used. Is there a way that the city can still be covered, in terms of ethical conduct? But then allow for you to essentially take this ordinance off the books, so to speak, do the review and bring it back.
Well, Council, the point that I would clarify is that the state statute governing ethics at the municipal level exists by operation of law. The city could not legislate its way out of that if it tried. Regardless of what you do locally, an absolute minimum, all municipal officers in the city of Monroe are going to be governed by that state statute. The statute does provide that the state law standards are a minimum standard, meaning that there is an opportunity for local jurisdictions to enact their own local ethics codes, and Monroe has done that. But that is not required by state law. That's a local option that some cities have taken. So to answer your question, the city would always be governed by some body of ethical restrictions, and that would be what exists at the state level, even if the city were to somehow overhaul or repeal or change in some way the existing ordinance that you currently have codified at Chapter 252 of the Monroe Municipal Code. couple of caveats or additional considerations. First, I believe that part of the city's existing ethics ordinance was originally enacted via the initiative process, and there are restrictions by state law that occur whenever the city would want to appeal or amend those specific provisions, and I would need to look specifically at which provisions would fall within the scope of that that concern before opining on it. The second issue is that if you were going to amend this ordinance in a meaningful way, one of the options that you would have is to simply default to the state law standards as they govern substantive ethical conduct, but still have a local procedure within the city of Monroe to process those ethical concerns. So to the extent that there would be a complaint that would be levied against a particular official or employee, you could still, for example, have a local ethics board and a procedure to follow for the purpose of processing a particular complaint without having additional ethical substantive standards beyond what the state law provides. That is one potential option.
If I could comment on that, that would be essentially what I'm, what I'm getting at. I think there's value in having the board. That's something that the community wanted, but it certainly seems like it would be a lot simpler, and it's already established law, and there's not a lot of ambiguity about what would or wouldn't be. I appreciate those. Yeah, that's an option. You
know. If I could then just maybe ask for a little bit of clarification, is it the council's preference for me to come back with an ordinance that preserves the ethics board's functions and the procedure for processing local ethics complaints, but that defaults to the state law substantive standards governing ethical conduct and does not impose any additional standards at the local level beyond that?
Well, sounds fine to me. That's a little different than what I said, but I think there are others that might want to weigh in, or perhaps. Or maybe
that's good. I'm happy to do whatever the council would like. I just want to make sure that my efforts are focused, if that's your preference.
That to me seems fair.
Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I guess the question I would have is the portion of it that we came from initiative.
I believe that would need to remain, council, and I would need to work with your city clerk to find out which specific provision or provisions those are in the existing code to make sure that the rules governing initiative and referendum and the preservation of that concept are not improperly infringed. So that's one aspect of the code that even under Councilmember Gehring's proposal would presumably need to remain.
Right. So I guess that's would be the initiative component stay.
Would it not be
to include that?
To include that.
Councilmember Gehring.
That's, I believe that's 252040D. It specifically says right in it that the council adopted this section as an ordinance rather than placing it on a ballot. So that's the reason that section is in there at all, is there were enough signatures to have a vote on it. But again, it doesn't really say anything in that section. It's right in the middle of the conflict of interest section, 040, letter D. Really sure what value that adds, certainly not control the whole thing, but do you simply just repeal and then replace with the new ordinance that still that still has the ethics board in it, and the procedures that we've set up, and by that way you could take out the ambiguity and the really what seems to be unnecessary section D. By that, still keeping what we have, but really providing for clarity and straightforwardness.
And I will come back with a definitive answer, Council, but my assumption, my working assumption, is that specific provision cannot be altered without, again, submitting the proposal to the voters. But I will, per Councilmember Gamble's suggestion, keep that included in the modified ordinance that I'll bring back to the council's consideration to make sure that you're in compliance with state law.
Great.
I think the non-negotiables would be to deal with the situation with regarding making sure the conflicts of interest section is very clear that it isn't necessary for council members to recuse themselves from the bills for things they don't have anything to do with, even if it's the name on their paycheck, that kind of thing. That there's no ethical violation if Councilmember Gamble votes on the bills because Comcast is listed there. Or I'm not paid in any way, shape, or form if AT&T was to show up on there. It doesn't affect my paycheck. I don't believe it affects yours.
No.
And so that ultimately, I mean, that needs to change. I mean, this... I mean, you say it all the time, out of an abundance of caution. But let's, you know, we shouldn't have to do that, you know, let's have a law that makes sense, an ordinance that makes sense, that's clear, and addresses these particular issues. Yeah. That's the non-negotiable.
I know this is a policy decision, so my opinion doesn't matter. But another thing by following state law that we would benefit from is we wouldn't be spending city attorney time every time we have to change something that is already done for us. So it is, you know, we already have that, we're bound by that anyways. It would make sense for us to follow that in that term, because it takes a lot of staff time to work with the city attorney, and it costs us, you know, a significant amount of money every time Zach needs to redo something on our ordinance.
And if we have to do that and leave that section D in, then, you know,
it's a one time
as long as there's clarity about, you know, the bills type stuff.
So it sounds as though council is kind of shifting gears here a little bit to say that we are going to hold off on discussion the specifics that are here tonight in order for the city attorney to do a much broader scope of review and recommendation, bring a recommendation back to city council.
Up to and including using state law.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mr. Ray, could I just ask one more clarifying question? So I'm crystal clear with what the council's preference is. You would like me to bring back an ordinance that retains the ethics board structure and the existing procedure that's codified in Chapter 252 for processing ethics complaints, but what you're asking for is a default to the substantive conduct standards under state law rather than additional extra standards of conduct at the local level.
And making sure the bills, if what you just said accommodates the not having to get up for things like the bills.
And also preserving the provision of the existing code that was originally adopted via the initiative process of to retain that. Okay, thank you. I think I understand.
All right. Okay, then. We'll then move on to new business number 3 and Mr. Breath. Paul. And then City Administrator Breath has a point to Jeff.
Hey, Mayor. I'd like to offer a brief review of our closed work program for the planning commission this year. There are basically about 3 areas we're talking about. One's related to comprehensive plan work, one is related to the development code, and the other is ongoing land use and development applications. The work program, we have a few things listed under the comp plan. First one of note is the East Monroe project. You know, that basically came to a halt last spring, summer, when the hearing examiner found in favor of the appeal on the phase environmental impact statement. Well, the owner has reinitiated this project with the intention of doing a full environmental impact statement, and has actually made a request to have a copy of a letter to, I'll say, restart the process that basically went on hold with that hearing examiner's decision to bring that back to finish that process, do the environmental impact statement, thoroughly vet the project, and then bring it forth to the commission and the council for a final decision. The second item has to do with
comp plan, text amendments. I think we've talked about that before. What this really is about is prepping the current plan for the 2015 update, basically to save ourselves a lot of consultant time in starting with a cleaner, more current document as we get started. That in the next, well, we want to have someone on board, team on board in the next maybe a couple of months with a target date at the end of 2014 for that 2015 update. It's due by June of 15, so it's good to have a few months of slack time with that. We did this past fall talk about school mitigation fees. That was really the first item on our work program in terms of timing. And I mentioned the 2015 update. Those, we didn't have any citizen-initiated amendments this past year, as you know. So we really have those three, East Monroe, the text amendments, and the 2015 update. And then that second area has to do with the Unified Development Code. And that's really all about reorganizing, reformatting, updating, cleaning that all those several chapters of the development code. There's so many conflicts and inconsistencies in there now. This will make that a much more usable document. That's a pretty big task. And certainly the ongoing development applications, amendments, rezonings, subdivisions, all that's where actually the commission doesn't do subdivisions, but those things that will be coming in throughout the year. And we also are looking at postponing two projects related to the comp plan. One's the city gateway districts that we've talked about in the past, and the system plan updates, sewer, water, transportation. Taking both of those and combining those with the 2015 update, make that a part of the update. Part of that makes sense since things like sewer, water, transportation are going to be done in any case with that 2015 work, as well as the parks and recreation. And the gateway districts, frankly, just don't have the staff time and the resources to deal with that this year. And we've been short on staff for, what, 2-3 months now. And actually, we had interviews on Friday with four, I think, excellent candidates to hire another planner. So we're really hoping to come out of that with some help. But we would like to postpone those two from this year to just simply make it a part of the 2015 effort over the next year and a half, 2 years. So with that, it's brief, I know, but I'd be happy to take any questions and any direction.
Not first, see Mr. Basil.
Thank you, Mayor. One of the items that isn't on this list that came to my attention today, we've had many discussions over the past year in regards to the municipal campus here and the potential for some public-private partnerships and other municipalities or government entities that may want to join forces on a municipal campus building or whatever you want to call it. So one of the things that was glaring to us when we did the site survey a number of years ago was the height limit on this in this particular zone. So I want to make sure the council knew that that was important from staff perspective, that we may want to look at that because it'd be better to adjust the height limit on this particular lot or in this zone or however big an area council wants to look at sooner than later, because we may have opportunities out there to get grant funds or partnership funds, who knows what, but it'd be nice to have the height limit addressed prior to, because it's my belief and the consultant's belief that worked on this project several years ago that the height limit we have won't work for the building footprint we will need. So at any rate, that would need to be adjusted. So if council wants us to look at that, that could be put on this work plan as well to send to the Planning Commission.
Not quite sure who was first. I'm going to go with GA, Councilor Gamble.
Oh, I just had a question on the mitigation fees. Is it down as a
completed?
Well, you know, we went through the process yeah. last fall, and council elected to take no action.
No, it's completed with the Planning Commission. That's the Planning Commission's work. They've already given their recommendation, and the council wants to consider it with the rest of the items when they come back to the council.
So the completed statement is they've already...
That's the Planning Commission's work program. Is they're completed with it.
And their recommendation is
favorable to the reduction. It's, City Council chose to delay any action until such time as other fees are brought back to council.
That's what I needed.
All right, Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. With that, I'd like to move to approve the attached Planning Commission work program for 2013, including the addition of the height restrictions as mentioned by Administrator Brazel.
Second.
All right, motion has been made by Councilmember Gearing, seconded by Councilmember Hanford to approve the attached Planning Commission work program for 2013, including the review of height restrictions as recommended by City Administrator Brazel. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Brazel, I just have a question. So if the school litigation fee is listed as completed, why is it going back on the Planning Commission work list?
That was just for notice for the council, in case you were wondering. So it's completed. Their work program is the dates of the ones that are done.
Okay, so that it's completed.
Right, like the ones that say they're not on, that we postponed too. It's, you know, just so we know that all those things that are floating out there, where they are.
Okay, so actually there is no work required for the Planning
For the Planning Commission, correct.
Right, yeah. Just need that clarity. Thank you.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. Clarification from City Administrator Brazel on the height limits. Are you talking about this building, or are you talking about the downtown area, or in specific, what are we referring to?
You want to answer?
Yeah. Just for clarification, you can't do a height limit for a building. You have to do it by zones. Right now, the height limitation for this zone, which is public service, or PS, is 45 feet. So I would assume that if we want to narrow the scope and not get carried away, is to look at the height limitation for the PS zone.
So that would be the constraint of the motion, I guess, to include that it's limited to the PS zone, not every zone.
Yeah, especially if we want to get it done, you know, sooner rather than later, so it doesn't keep going on for, you know, there's what, 12 zones, and if they have to go through each zone individually, that would take much longer than doing one.
So if it's already 45 feet, what's the rationale for wanting to change?
45 feet, you probably really couldn't get a four-story building in there.
But you could get a three-story.
You get a three, and that's the...
Three times what we have.
That's what we have now in the plan without having anybody join us in a partnership.
Okay. So the current facility is only one floor. The plan, you're talking about the plan, which probably I haven't seen.
It's a space study, which I think we passed out to you a month ago.
The Master Campus plan was a three-story building kind of in this area. Were you saying it could get even bigger if there's more
joint forces
together? The possibilities are there for a taller building than three stories, hence the request for that.
And school district.
Sure. There's.
And the other entity that's mentioned interest is looking for about 30,000 square feet. And so that building you looked at before on the campus plan was around 50, I want to say, or something like that. So that
yeah, that's what they were doing. It. I just was trying to get clarification.
That's what that scope is.
Of what we're looking for and why. So
do I need to amend to include public space, or is that good enough?
The friendly amendment would be the motion is limited to public space for
items. I'll amend my motion to
public service.
Which one?
Public service.
The height restriction study for public service. So.
Second.
Both first and second. Are in agreement with regards to the amendment. Okay. All right. Any other questions? Okay. With regards to the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed?
One last quick note regarding the work program. A couple of projects that are nearly ready for you. One is the sign code update. Commission meets Monday night for a recommendation, and we'll be here a week from tonight for introduction of sign code. The other is the Roosevelt Road rezoning, which will be coming to you next month. So those are nearly done.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, next item is approval for council agenda meeting format changes. We'll begin with City Administrator Brazel.
We're skipping.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. My apologies. City Attorney did not have a chance to review that. Item number one with Diane. And Diane is out this week, and so we'd like to postpone that until they have a chance to review together. I had it crossed out on my list. I forgot to tell you. So, City Administrator Brazel.
Thank you, Mayor. There's a couple of things wrapped up under this, and so my thinking is we'll talk about the changes to the rules of procedure, but I don't want to lose part of moving on to the next topic, talking about communication between council and staff, so we definitely want to do that at the end. But at any rate, as a brief outline, the Legislative Affairs Committee has been meeting on a routine basis looking at the rules of procedure, and one of the things that was glaring to us is a lot of the rules relate to how we conduct our weekly meetings at council meetings, and it's become pretty cumbersome to have study sessions and regular sessions, and so the committee has looked at going to just one meeting type, and that meeting type would be a regular session. And in that, the agenda would be the same every week, and that draft proposals on in front of you as well. That would do away with the need also to extend meetings past 8 and past 10. All of that, those motions that really haven't served this group very well. It's basically stood in the way of conducting business in an efficient manner. So that's some of the changes that are in front of you tonight. If council agrees on those changes, we'd have to do some work on the MMC to reflect that. One of the other things that the committee talked about this evening is the efficiency of the council committees and how effective that has been. And so one of the things that we've talked about is for, let's say on this topic, I'm the presenter, I present the topic, then I would turn it over to the chair, and the chair would make a recommendation from that particular committee that addressed that topic. So that way that the council will hear from the committee chair, the chair's recommendation for that committee, and then council can chime in at that point. So anyway, with that, I'm going to turn it over to the Legislative Affairs Chair, Councilmember Davis.
Thank you. So this is the, we did bring this up a couple weeks ago. We gave you a heads up on this and sort of a quick overview. But this is, this is the proposal. Talked about it again today and went over it. Basically, as Administrator Brazel explained, this is just a way of streamlining, making things go a little bit smoother and more workable for us so that we're not caught up with
silly motions.
So what we're looking at is proposing to make at least these three changes on this section 3.1.3. The other one was section 3.1.3.
311 or 314?
This is accurate. A lot of those other things will take place after these motions at a later date and take care of themselves when these motions pass tonight.
Okay.
Right. Can we talk about that? If these motions pass, then that's going to require some other things to be looked at. And that we'll do once this has been changed, then we can look at those other things.
Okay.
And we'll recommend sort of a cleanup on the
sections. So I'll make a motion to amend the council rules of procedure. Moving section 313, 311.
I'm amending 311.
I'm sorry, yes. Start over. Motion to amend the council rules of procedure, removing section 313. Motion to amend the council rules of procedure, amending section 311. Motion to amend the council rules of procedure, removing section 312. And motion to approve the new draft agenda format.
Second. Okay, motion has been made by Councilmember Hamford and seconded by Councilmember Herrien, as read, to amend Council Rules of Procedure, removing Section 313, amending Section 311, removing Section 312, and approving the new draft agenda format. Councilmember Herrien.
Thank you. I appreciate the Chair Davis giving us the update. The changes were easy to get behind from my perspective. It really smooths things out. We lose a bunch of kind of silly motions that really aren't necessary. And just having one type of meeting, I mean, we have study topics, and it gives us the ability to do, you know, get more done on any given night rather than just on specific nights. And I just think that goes towards efficiency as well. And part of the bigger process of just doing cleanup work, a lot of what we've been able to do during this last year, clean up things that need to be cleaned up, and the rules of procedure really need to be cleaned up. So this is going to trigger some other ones, like Councilmember Davis said, and so I look forward to getting through all those as our committee gets a chance to look at and make a recommendation. But I'm certainly in support of these. Thank you.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. Just a couple of clarifications. The removing 313 is removing the study session concept altogether, correct? So that means we can have agenda items that we vote on at any meeting. We can still study things on any meeting, but it gives us a flexibility.
Correct.
So that I totally understand. 311, it says to amend, and I'm not sure what we will amend on that one. Is it just to
begin at 7? That's it.
It's just going to say that they begin at 7?
Losing the 10 p.m.
That's what we're looking at.
So I'll come back to that one in a second. 312 is to remove so that we have to reconvene in a study session. We basically, our meetings would just go until from beginning to end with no motion in the middle.
Okay.
Correct. So those all make sense. The only thing I'd say on the meeting ending at 10 p.m., I do think that's a good practice to have, because as meetings go into 10:30, 11, 12 o'clock, we really start losing people, including us up here, people in the audience. I don't know that I find that a huge disruption to, you know, have somebody say, do we want to continue? I kind of like it out there. The other concern I have is that we have reduced the number of meetings we have because of budget concerns, which then pushes meetings to be longer. I think it's more beneficial if we try to keep meetings to 3 hours and have more of them if we need them. So that's my only concern on the getting rid of the 10 o'clock rule. When we first started on council, when I first started on council, it was common that it was 11:30 at night almost every week. And it just seems like those are really tough to. The stuff at the end of the agenda doesn't get the attention I think it's due. So that's the only one of those I'm not crazy about supporting. The other two make total sense to me. A couple other questions. Where do we state things like intentions of? One of the frustrations I have is when something's given to us in an agenda, like tonight we have ethics ordinance change, but we don't get a red line text version of that. And it seems like that puts a lot of ownership on us to print two documents and look at them side by side. And so I don't know if that's part of something we can do tonight or if that's something maybe the legislative committee wants to go look at. But that seems like it's a concern just from an efficiency standpoint. If we're talking about changing anything, that we just have some rules and procedure on how the information is presented to council. Moving executive sessions towards the end, I think also makes sense if we can. I understand sometimes we have to have them because there's an item that we're talking about, you know, next that we might have to pull aside. But as a general rule, that we do the executive sessions at the end would be something I'd also be interested in. And then something that just recently came up that had never happened that I'm aware of is, can council members just decide that I want to add an agenda item with action on behalf of the city versus I want to add an agenda item that we talk about? You know, I understand it makes sense if two council members say, I would like to have this item on the agenda next week, but he had an item that was, I want a resolution brought forward next week. And I don't know if that's something that we have the ability to do, or if we want to address that at all. I don't know if those are things for the legislative committee to look at or not. I just wanted to throw those out there.
City Attorney Elam.
Oh, I'm just informing Mr. Brazel that I'd be happy to help him with that. A couple of those are legal points, and I'd be happy to speak with him offline.
Okay. So the question is to council whether these are something that you'd like to have some dialogue tonight about or send to the legislative committee to...
I think your point would be legislative committee because I don't know if there's, you know, staff issues or not. It's come up several times. Just the red line text is the one that always makes sense. When we have that, it's so much easier for us to go through and figure out what's changing as opposed to trying to find the needle in the haystack. I don't even know if that's something that we put in here or where that belongs, but it'd be nice to get some recommendation back from the legislative committee on that. And then, you know, I'd like to hear some ramifications about the 10 p.m. thing, because if we just do it because we think it's disruptive to have a motion, I'll probably vote against that because I think the benefits of trying to keep our meetings within a manageable footprint. But I didn't hear the rest of the discussion, so I'd like to hear from people that were on the committee as to why that was important enough to change.
All right, Councilman Gamble.
It was the one thing I was going to bring up was the 10 o'clock, you know, deal. I actually was going to suggest, you know, it maybe it's just tweaking the time because we seem to always be out of here at 11 if it's just that. But I do like the, you know, having that, you know, kind of time limit thing because I was put in there for a reason, and I haven't been a part of, but in the past, the meetings went to 12, 1 o'clock, you know, that sort of thing, and having the option or the ability to, you know what, so I don't know if it's a time adjustment, but I do agree with Councilman Williams that, you know, I don't find it too much of a nuisance, but I do like having the ability, you know, that we realize that, hey, we're going long. You know, and maybe we need to push some stuff off our end, and because it's just a fact. You know, you spend this amount of time, and all of us are like the baker that was sitting in the audience today. I've been up since 4:30 this morning, you know, or whatever, and it's just a natural tendency. You're not going to give as much focus to those items, and that's not fair to the agenda items.
One of the things that I think will help with us getting out, you know, by 10 or so on, and certainly you know, the points that council have made towards that is are good. I think that the new agenda in and of itself, or the format, will help us get out by 10, because in the past we've had typically 2 days a month that we take action, and so things are oftentimes lumped into those 2 days, you know, for those action items, and some of our quote study session items for the days have been, you know, very light.
You look for a question?
Yeah.
So are you lobbying that we put that the meetings end at 9?
If council wanted to leave it, you know, I doubt that would be very realistic, to be honest, but I think what I'm saying is that the 10 p.m. Was originally set because of the point the council several years ago wasn't getting out of here before midnight every week, you know, week on end, and at some point it became necessary to put that end time there, but I think that, you know,
7 to 10 p.m. is unreasonable for this. You could still put 7 to 10 p.m. And not have to have the motion at the end. It does still set an expectation that we're meeting, you know, until 10 p.m. But the motion is now, there is a motion out there right now to amend that to this format. So there would either have to be a friendly amendment to say, no, let's get rid of that amending portion, or council takes a vote, it fails, a new motion is made, or council takes a vote and it passes.
I guess I think I'm still right. Is that, you know, to Councilman Williams' point, I guess I'd like to hear too. I mean, if it's just the only reason why we're getting rid of it because it's a nuisance, I don't really see why we get rid of it. It's not really a nuisance to me, the 10 o'clock deal. So maybe Councilman McCamp is going to talk about it. That's why his light is on.
I'm waiting to be called upon.
All right. Councilmember Camp.
As far as I know, I have never seen a vote taken at 10 o'clock at the stop meeting. And I've been attending as a member of the audience and as a council member for many years. I don't know what it was like before. If we knew the options we had at 10 o'clock, for example, we were able to table items for the following weekend, we met more often. Or with that new format, we're more focused and didn't have to wait 2 weeks before we had another session where we could use something that might be applicable. I would like, as far as I'm concerned, since we vote in favor of extending past 10 o'clock anyway, it doesn't matter, I just didn't get rid of the vote. But if we have options on what we can do if we're running at 10 o'clock and we want to shut down for the night because we're not getting anywhere or the agenda is just too full, I'd be willing to reconsider that. But at this point, I would be in favor of taking this out just because of its nuisance value, as demonstrated tonight by the discussion during the ethics go, where we had to stop and take a vote to make sure that we could continue. Those are my points. Thank you.
I think the new agenda will allow for options in and of themselves, those options being if we're getting through the evening and we have only discussed 2 out of 10 items.
Right.
Having the ability to move something forward a week becomes much easier.
Will we be able to table items at that point then?
I wouldn't use the word table, but I would say that we would just move that item to the following week.
Postpone.
What's that? Yeah. Table is an actual.
Well, I said you're stopping discussion.
Yeah. All right. Councilmember Gary?
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate your comments, Councilmember Camp. We haven't really been going past 10 o'clock. And two, I do believe it is a nuisance. And we do actually have the ability today, if it came to 10 o'clock, to move stuff now, quite frankly. So I don't, the purpose of doing it, just make a practice of, if it gets to be a certain hour, and we certainly have done that in the past. It's getting too late. Let's take these two final action items and just move them to next week. Just as easy to do that. It is a nuisance. And we can accomplish the same things without having that there. So I'm in favor of making the I made the motion. Right, second. So I think it's fine how it is with removing the 10 o'clock.
I'm not quite sure, but Councilmember Davis.
Well, let me just say quickly that it's the one thing we did change, we put in unfinished business. So if we do run up against time, we have that fluidity, we just push it up to the next meeting, and then that starts our meeting now with unfinished business. And I think that was the intent is just to make it a little more fluid, a little more flexible for us, without stopping to get finished up. Or we can't talk about the business in session, or we can't do anything about that.
Clear what the it sounds like.
if we have a section called unfinished business, then at 10 o'clock we can move those items at the bottom of the agenda just automatically to unfinished business. We don't have to take a vote. That's what it sounded like Councilman Davis just said. It sounded like Councilman Gehring said, we don't need an end time at all. And so, which I still think it's as illogical to me to not have an ending time as it would be to not have an official starting time. It just, I have a problem with that. And especially given that we say we're not going to have a meeting next week because we don't have enough to talk about, but we're going to go till 1 in the morning tonight. And I know we don't do that regularly, but I don't understand. To me, putting an ending time in there it's not like we're changing the flow and we're not changing the spirit of any of this. It just, to me, it seems very illogical that we would say, come from 7 till ?
So. May I ask a question? City Administrator or City Attorney Lell, I believe it's 311. In that, is that specific to having to have a motion to extend past 10 p.m.? And if that's what that section is entirely about, I think it still would enable us to have at the top of the proposed agenda a time slot of 7 to 10. Does that make sense? I have to admit, I don't know 311 off the top of my head. So I don't know.
I believe the provision you're referring to in 311 currently provides that the meeting would end at 10 unless extended by majority vote of the council. That's what the last clause of that provision currently provides.
Okay.
That's kind of amended. We just take that out and leave that 7 to 10.
Okay. So I guess. So the question to Councilmember Williams there is that the amendment or 311 says, again, if you would, City Attorney Lowell.
Currently provides that the meeting will be scheduled to end at 10 p.m., but clarifies that the meeting may be extended by majority vote.
And so I guess the question there really is in amending that section, do we leave in the language that says that it's scheduled to end at 10 p.m. and just get rid of the section that says unless
provided the meeting's being extended,
unless we vote to extend it. So what that does is that it will set the set time 3 to 10, but we don't necessarily have to take a vote each time at 10 p.m. when we're in the middle of discussion to extend it past. We can float past anyways. We always have. So I don't know, would that...
As long as we can do that and we don't get an unintended consequence of somebody coming back and saying, you guys passed something at 10:05 and now we're going to take you to court because that's to me why 311 as it stands right now seems like it just makes sense to me to leave it alone.
And I'll be happy to provide perhaps some compromise language for the council to consider at one of your next meetings, but I would agree with that concern. I don't believe anyone could realistically challenge a council substantive action simply because you went past a 10 p.m. deadline that was established in your protocol. But my recommendation for the council is not to even invite that type of challenge by building in something in your procedures that either implicitly extends the meeting if you're in the middle of a discussion, or allows you to expressly do that through majority vote or by consensus, something to that effect.
Well, based on that, it seems that maybe a friendly amendment to remove the amending section of 311 until we clarify opinions from the city attorney would be reasonable, and then upon that, bring that to take it back to the Legislative Affairs Committee for their consideration and then recommendation back to council. It's not something that's going to, it's not a live or die situation here. But to your point, thank you for thinking of that. That could be an unintended consequence and people have
gone after.
more things for less.
Yes, exactly.
So, Councilmember Hanford made the motion, so he would be
glad to amend that.
And I'll second the
amendment. Okay, so friendly amendment.
Friendly amendment.
To remove.
Motion to amend the council rules of procedure amending section 311.
And I seconded the original, so I'll second that as well.
All right. So the motion now is to amend the council rules of procedure, removing section 313, removing section 312, and approving the new draft agenda format. All right. Councilmember Campbell.
Thank you.
And if I understand correctly, you're going to bring back something concerning the 10 o'clock cutoff.
I'd be happy to, Councilman, just give some clarifications to what the council's really looking for there. Some text. Is it just clarification that the meeting doesn't necessarily end at 10?
Scheduled to end at 10. Doesn't have to, right?
My big concern with that is if we're going to specify a time, I would like to be a hard start, referred to as a hard stop. This is just my opinion. At 10 o'clock, the meeting ends. Any unfinished business goes to unfinished business all the week. That's just my opinion. And we're here tonight. I'd like to weigh in with the vote.
Okay. Well, I think somebody has called the motion for questions, so we will vote at this time on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Thank you. Yes, City Administrator Brazel. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mayor. The other part of that discussion, I just want to make sure that Council knows. Councilmember Williams brought up some concerns about communication and redlining, those types of things. I've also heard some concerns from council members in regards to motions that happen here at council level, and then staff moves on, and the end result may not exactly look like what the motion was here on the floor that night. So I would also propose that be talked about some more at the legislative committee. We touched on this evening, but I think with Councilmember Williams' concerns, those other concerns I've heard, if we can revisit that at the legislative affairs committee level.
That's a recommendation. Is that okay with council?
Chair, I'll take that on. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Moving right along here. Councilmember reports. We'll start to Councilmember Gearing.
I'll be brief. I have two. One, I was honored to be invited by the Dream Group to the Father's Day Planning Committee meeting. And with all the activities planned, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And once they get all the plans smoothed out, I hope it becomes a great addition to the slate of summer activities. Second, after the Chamber Ambassador meeting last week, I had the opportunity to discuss the sports day with the Mexican rodeo organizers. The plan to have the Seahawks Sounder team members appear as part of the student sports event has been approved. I believe they're working on the contest details.
Thank you, Councilmember Davis.
In our meeting, the legislative committee today, we also talked about our next meeting. We'll be looking at the social media issue again. What was brought up was looking at one of the other cities' policies and looking at way using that as a template and so it's fine. Because it was a plan. Building our plan around that, so that will be on our agenda for the next meeting next month.
All right. And we do know that discussion item was requested by council to return as a discussion item next week.
We're going to want to move that. Our next meeting is the 16th. We're going to want to move that to the 16th.
Well, that would. And I know Councilor Administrator Bradley would have asked that, but I just wanted you to be aware of that in light of what Councilmember Davis has stated tonight. So when we get to that portion, we'll talk more about it. Councilmember Gamble, anything important tonight?
Let's see. Well, Diane's not here. So our HR and finance meets next Monday, not the first Monday of the month, or the week after.
change back.
People are going to be gone.
Did we change it? Because I didn't know that we got any response from anybody other than...
It's changed on the agenda. I was just...
That's correct. We never really got any response. There was some discussion that the committee could meet on another day. We didn't have to be on that specific day.
We left the meeting the last one. We said the 26th, so that's why I wanted to clarify here tonight.
Correct.
So if we're not going to do the 26th, I'm fine, but I just wanted to have everybody on the same page. So we're back to the...
We'll see you on
The normal time. All right, thanks. I didn't want to be here, nobody.
Yeah, we'll be sure to notify all council members on that committee that it's moving to the
normally scheduled,
time. All right, Council Member Hampton.
Okay.
Before Mike shares as part of the reports, I will try to make this as brief as possible. With the understanding that I'd like to request to bring some information back to council for discussion, community input, and potential action at a future date. Tonight we talked a little bit about two items that I think have been very close to people's heart here in Monroe. One is the Miracle Field presenting the proclamation, choose to include Dave earlier this evening. The other was related to downtown as it related to parking. Both of those areas have been on the radar for some time. I'd like to add some focus to both those areas tonight and request that council allow us to bring some information back some details specific to public restrooms. I'm stretching there, but I'm trying to make a connection. The Miracle Field for a number of years has had as part of its plan public restrooms. And the Rotary Club has been a great partner both in one, completing the Miracle League or the Miracle Field, and two, has been a continued partner in the hopes of developing completing the restrooms down there. We've also talked about restrooms downtown, and the thing that has kept us from moving forward with either of those has been finances or revenue. We believe that we have identified a source of revenue allowable under law to help pay for those at some point. Our recommendation, or what we'd like to do, is bring back as a discussion item next week, specifically a restroom at Miracle Field. But keep in mind that the discussion we have with regards to Miracle Field, we'll also have or be bringing back at some point for downtown as well. It'll be the same discussion, just different locations and different times. So we're not ready, I don't think, for downtown just yet. But we've identified a funding source for the difference. Currently today we have $50,000 set aside in our general fund, and the Rotary Club has an additional $52,000, which I think leaves a balance of roughly $70,000 or
almost
$72,000 that would be needed to complete the project out of the Rotary Field. We've identified a funding source for that. Would not impact the general fund at all, and it would allow us to complete the Rotary Field bathrooms by this summer. So we'd like to bring that back, and for your consideration, if council would be so willing to hear that. We had some more information for you tonight. It's too late. We're not going to do it. But if you were open, we could bring it back next week, since next week's agenda is somewhat light. I just want to give you a heads up that we're going to do that, and we'll be seeking again public input as well, because it does involve public funds. So with that, Mike, anything to add there?
I would just add, in light of what the mayor just mentioned and time of night and all that, is I don't know if all of you or any of you, which ones of you have actually been to the facility, whether it's watching a game or anything, but I would be happy to if any of you would like to meet you there and kind of show you around and talk about it. or just talk about it, just, you know, feel free to contact me and give you a background as I know it on the facility. It's being used a lot by our community. It's something we're really quite proud of, and that last piece is really critical for that facility. It's probably, you know,
it's a baseball field, but I'll let you know that there's lacrosse practice that takes place.
All right. I'd like to bring forth a resolution.
All right. Deputy Chief, anything to report this evening?
No, man.
Wow, you sat there patiently for all this time for that. We appreciate it so much. Jeff, anything additional? All right, Ben, anything additional this evening?
Yeah, just wanted to update you guys on IT since vendors taking over. They're moving along, doing well. One of the large projects that they're going to start working on next is actually fleshing out the network documentation and where everything lies and giving us kind of how our current state is and recommendations on future state. I originally had a quote from them to do this work a while ago, and that has we've kind of worked with them in that price has dropped about $4,000. So hopefully they're going to start working on that this week. But everything seems to be going well from there.
It's good news. We wanted to be sure to bring that before council before I sign the amended contract with them to continue. So instead of 16, we're looking at 12.
Correct.
So. All right, thank you for that. And I'll be signing, unless there's any objections, signing that tomorrow. Right. Brad, anything?
Just one thing. In case you hadn't noticed, there is now an automatic external defibrillator in the lobby.
Walker.
If you have a need.
Just for clarification, who's certified to use it?
Yeah, you are.
It tells you.
Just Brad and I.
Step by step.
I won't be here next week.
It's like a Microsoft man.
He talks to you.
That's for when meetings go past 10.
Yes. City Administrator Russell.
Be the resolution.
Thank you very much. Draft agenda for March 26th. Number one study session topic is the sign code update. The social media policy, it appears we've moved out to April 16th. And we have a draft agenda for April 2nd, 2013. Any additions or deletions?
And if council would allow the bathrooms?
Let's put the bathrooms in.
So,
I'm assuming there's going to be more. But there's always something else by the time you get to it. Thank you.
And I just want to clarify that the discussion item on social media policy, Councilmember Lane.
Thank you, Councilmember Kemp. I won't be here next week. I'll be out of the state, so fill the agenda with this stuff.
All right. Okay. So to clarify the social media policy, we're moving out to December or to December. To April 16th due to the fact that the committee won't be revisiting it until that time.
But have more of a recommendation. Is that how
you said it? You may have a recommendation. They may not have it, but at least give them
more time to look at it.
All right. Anything else to add? Anything else?
Do you have a motion?
Okay.
Second.
All right, and the motion has been made by Councilmember Camford, seconded by Councilmember Gearing to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Marathon.